The news out of Iraq today once again pairs a political advance with further bloodshed. Earlier in the day, five new members of Iraq's cabinet were sworn into office. As we mentioned, along the Syrian border, U.S. troops launched what's being described as a major offensive, reportedly killing 75 insurgents. But in Baghdad, violence continues. Since the formation of the transitional government at the end of last month, more than 300 people have been killed by guerrilla violence. And after a brief lull in the fighting, it has emerged as bad as ever. If you have a question about the Iraqi insurgency, how insurgent tactics have changed, and how U.S. and Iraqi governments are adapting to meet them, we'd like to hear from you. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is retired U.S. Marine Corps Colonel Gary Anderson, who serves as a consultant to the Department of Defense. It's nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be here, Neil.
Today's offensive by U.S. troops represents a shift in tactics, does it not?
It's a shift toward the approach toward really going after the foreign insurgents heavily, particularly at the border crossing area where we think the majority of them seem to be coming across from Syria. That's become something of a sanctuary for them. It needs to be dealt with.
Now, does this reflect the political judgment that the Sunnis, of course we know that the Sunnis were the party and the people largely in control during the Saddam Hussein regime and the party that stands to lose the most with democracy in Iraq, that they are the basis of much of the insurgency? We keep hearing you talk about previous government elements and that sort of Ba'athist elements, that those people are beginning to move from active insurgency to maybe sitting on the fence, and that the major problem now is coming from these foreign insurgents.
I think that's correct. There was an article in the Washington Post this morning that I think laid it out pretty well. There have been two major elements in this, in the Sunni portion of this insurgency, the Ba'athists, as you've mentioned, and the foreign fighters. The interesting thing, though, is although, as the Post says, it's an unholy alliance, that it's an alliance with two very different end states. The Ba'athists, as you say, do want to get back into power in some way, shape, or form. The foreigners really want to bring the whole house down. They'd like to incite chaos and civil war. So they've been really targeting lately with suicide bombings, the security services trying to discourage recruitment, and also targeting the Shia and Kurds to try to incite a civil war.
Are they at any point working at cross purposes, these two wings, if you will, of the insurgency?
At some point they will. At some point, no matter where they go, let's say for some reason they were on the brink of success, at that point in time their end state goals are totally incompatible.
So that they, at that point, would reach it. But at some point, don't the Sunnis say, hey, these foreign fighters are really undercutting our battle here?
I think that actually happened in Fallujah. We've got some, I think, pretty good evidence that many of the folks in Fallujah who might not necessarily like us decided that these foreigners were a lot more dangerous in their midst than the Americans were. So far, that's been a problem. We were both foreign elements, but it was a little bit easier to accept Arab Muslims than Christian Americans. So that has been a factor. We're going away now, and that's sort of shifting.
Our guest is Gary Anderson, a retired colonel in the U.S. Marine Corps. If you'd like to join the conversation about the insurgency in Iraq and evolving tactics on both sides, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. We'll begin with Jim. Jim's calling from Des Moines.
Yes, I've got two questions. What is the best assessment of the goal of the so-called insurgents? I mean, they are such a relatively small number. It seems to me, I mean, can they hope, I heard it said over the weekend, somebody saying, to try to stage a coup, to take over this government or something like that. Again, their numbers are so small. Are they just lashing out and killing as many people as they can, just purely as a reaction to having lost power, the Ba'athists, et cetera? What is their realistic possible hope? And I also occasionally hear about, well, they're hoping to foment a civil war. Again, given their relative numbers, what hope would there be in that? This is something I have not understood as long as this has been going on. Could you please help me?
Jim, let me put it this way. There are the two elements of the insurgency have had a loose coalition between them in the past. The foreign elements are the folks who really would like to see a civil war to incite chaos. If they can do that, that gives them a sort of a sanctuary, something like an Afghanistan that they haven't had since the fall of the Taliban.
Pardon me, but given the numbers, what is the realistic hope of a civil war?
We don't know what the numbers are at this point in time. We think that the numbers of foreigners are relatively small as opposed to the Baathists who have opposed the occupation.
And when you say relatively small, thousands, tens of thousands?
I would say that would be in the lower thousands. But the number of Baathists who at least have tacitly supported the insurgency is much larger than that. But from a standpoint of the Baathists, they're the ones I think they would like to see themselves back in government in some way, shape, or form.
Jim?
Are there enough of them to make that a realistic prospect of winning a civil war, enough Baathists and Sunnis?
The foreigners don't need to win. They need the chaos to hide in. If they would align themselves with the Sunnis in a civil war, that would give them a cover to do other things that they wanted to do.
Again, I'm wondering about just the prospect of a civil war, though, of the chances, whether the foreign forces join in it or not, the realistic chances of the Baathists and the Sunnis accomplishing anything by starting a civil war, given the relative numbers of the Sunnis versus the rest of the population.
Nobody wins in a civil war, and the Shia have not risen to the bait, nor have the Kurds. They, as I say, the foreigners have attempted, I think, to incite that type of thing, and by and large, the Shia have been wise enough to say, that they understand what's happening. They've been smart enough not to allow that to happen.
Yet the Shia do have militias of their own, the Mahdi army of Muqtada al-Sadr, and, of course, the Peshmerga, the Kurdish militia. They are separate. They're not part of the Iraqi armed forces per se at this moment. So if a civil war were to erupt, the players are already on the chessboard.
The players are already on the board should they decide to do that, and we can only hope that they won't.
Jim, thanks for the call.
Very good show. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Robert, and Robert's with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, my question is, with the amount of insurgents' bombs that are going off, the car bombs and everything, where are they getting the material? Where do they keep coming up with all this material to make the bombs?
Well, Robert, that's a good question, and frankly, there is enough spare explosives laying around Iraq to start four or five different wars. It's having seen the amount of ammo dumps and the leftovers from the Saddam regime that it's hard to really keep a track on. If there's anything other than oil that Iraq is rich in, it's explosives.
Okay. Yeah. I was under the assumption we've pretty much been over the country pretty well, and looks like we would have secured them things, ammo dumps.
There was less of a rush to secure those things at the end of the war than there might have been.
That's probably one of the things we'd count on. If we had a chance to do it again, we would have done it a lot better.
Robert, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's talk now with Rick, and Rick is calling from Shaker Heights in Ohio.
Yes. General, since it's true that for any insurgency to be successful, a significant percentage of the population must be either passive or be supporting the insurgents, in private, is the U.S. general is concerned about the strength of the insurgency, specifically the number of suicide bombers they have been able to recruit, which is significantly more than it happened in Israel.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for the promotion. Unfortunately, the Marine Corps didn't see it your way. But to answer your question, the majority of the suicide bombers are foreigners. They come to the country seeking what they call martyrdom operations. Very, very few that we know of Iraqis who have actually participated in that. However, what the Iraqi Baathists have done when they've allied themselves is they've provided the bomb-making factories, the materiel, and to some extent the reconnaissance of targets.
Yes. Sir?
Yeah?
Is it true that the Kurds consider Kirkuk their Jerusalem?
I don't know if they consider it their Jerusalem, but they certainly consider it part of their ethnic makeup. That is going to be a real issue in the coming constitutional process because, as you know, Saddam brought in a lot of non-Arabs that were non-native to the area and settled them there. And, of course, now they feel that that's their home. These are what some of the UN people call get out of my house issues, and they're going to be major issues. I don't think they're insurmountable, but they're going to be tough for the Constitution.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
We're talking with retired Colonel Gary Anderson. He joins us here in Studio 3A today, 800-989-8255 and TOTN at NPR.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let me ask you this, an email question from Ted. How do you know the reliability of the intelligence you get? Do you monitor Arab media such as Al Jazeera?
From a standpoint of monitoring and getting intelligence in this war is the toughest thing to get. Some of you get from open sources. Others you get from talking to people on the street and so forth. But it's the toughest thing to do. For us, in a foreign situation, because of the lack of language skills, and to some extent the lack of knowledge of the culture and so forth, it's been extremely difficult.
A lot of people have said that the solution to the Sunni Baathist part of this insurgency is politics. At the same time, these foreign fighters, is politics going to solve that part of the problem?
No. I think if the government handles it right, I think they can deconstruct the two. There isn't going to be a political solution with the foreigners. Their goal is chaos in Iraq. They don't particularly care what happens to Iraq. They want to see the kind of chaos that would allow them to operate under our radar in that country. So I'm afraid that's a non-starter politically. But the Baathists, I think they do have a fairly good chance, if they play it right, of dealing with them.
Not to say it's going to be easy, but that.
It's not going to be easy at all.
Yeah, let's talk with Chuck, and Chuck's with us from San Francisco.
Thank you very much. Actually, that point is very much related to what I wanted to ask, and it seems to me that there could be a political solution to the problem of the foreign fighters because it would eliminate support within the population for the presence of these foreign people who are, I'm sure, causing the Iraqi people a fair amount of misery. So if people got a sense of the political system as really offering them an opportunity to have their interests represented, I think that would go a long way towards eroding support for the foreign fighters, and that's kind of the problem I've seen from the start, is it seems that we've seen security as a precondition for democracy, and I think that's backwards. I think democracy is going to be a precondition for security, and we should have spent a lot more time building parties that weren't based on religious factions, but were based on, you know, political platforms, and allowed the emergence of real candidates and leaders and freedom of the press and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's no two ways about it. If in fact we can figure out a way to get the Iraqi population understanding that this is an unwanted foreign element, it'll help to uncover some of them. The big issue, from a standpoint of the government's ability to be credible, is going to be how it handles electricity this summer. That's going to be the largest single factor, I think, in them maintaining a reputation as a credible government. If they can get a handle on electricity and keep the air conditioning reasonably running better than they did last summer, it'll be a huge improvement.
But don't you think that there are things beyond just getting the infrastructure up and running, but in the way of political development, that need a whole lot more attention in order for a functioning democracy to emerge that's gonna solve a lot of these problems with the insurgency?
The list of things to be solved is longer than I could list here, But electricity is a big manifestation of that.
And let me throw the economy in there. Obviously, insurgencies don't go along so well if people have to go to work. So
that's correct.
Chuck, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks.
Let's see if we get one more caller in. Joe. Joe's with us from Long Branch.
Thanks. General, I appreciate your the remark you made had to do with if we had to do it over, we would do it differently. But I believe that no matter what tactic be used, I believe it was the project of the new American century that was the mother of this tactic, this movement here. I'm a World War II veteran, and I was involved in the first Gulf War, even though I was against the policy itself. I feel that in the long run, that we cannot or will not prevail there, regardless. And no one seems to be counting the cost, not just in terms of our own loss of life and money, but the cost of the Iraqi lives and what this legacy would be. Would you be able to speak to that, please? Thanks.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, I think it remains to be seen what we really call success in this thing. But I think one of the things that I run into in talking to some of my Arab friends is even those who kind of feel the way you do about the war itself realize that if, in fact, there can be a movement toward democracy in that region, they think it'll be a huge step forward. I can only hope that that portion of it is successful.
Colonel Anderson, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
Gary Anderson, formerly of the U.S. Marine Corps, now a consultant to the Department of Defense, and he joined us here in Studio 3A. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.